Do you know someone who has attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder? Maybe your child, another loved one or friend, you? We'll discuss the conditions and some of the controversy surrounding their diagnosis and treatment, and our guest psychologist will provide advice and information to help those who have or are touched by ADD or ADHD. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July 24th. What are your challenges with or questions about living with ADD or ADHD? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Wes Crenshaw, a board-certified family psychologist from the Kansas City Metro. He's written a weekly advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World for nearly 10 years. And next month, he'll begin a regular blog and periodic articles for Attitude magazine. He is the author of I Always Wanted to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. And included in all of your credentials, you have a connection to Wisconsin. What is it?
I do. I have spent several years at the University of Wisconsin's Writers Institute in Madison. They have a good program every April, and we go up there and learn to improve our craft. And I have some fiction writing that's coming out later this year. For people who've read this book, they know it includes a fair amount of vignettes that are written in a narrative style. And I learned a lot from the good people at the University of Wisconsin. I love it.
Well, welcome back to Wisconsin via the radio. Let's first talk about the difference between ADD and ADHD. What are they?
Yeah, I've come to the conclusion that the term ADHD is about the worst branding since New Coke or something. they changed the diagnosis about the same time, I think, and went from ADD with hyperactivity or ADD with inattention or combined type to the single diagnosis of ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And what makes it such horrible branding and confusing to people is that the vast majority of people who have this diagnosis do not have hyperactivity, whether they're children or adults. And so, you know, someone will come in and be noticing the symptoms of inattention, and you'll say, well, have you ever been tested for ADHD? And they say, well, I'm not hyperactive. And, you know, they're probably right. So this is very confusing, and people kind of stumble over it, even the terminology. So in the book, I just decided to go back and stick with the old ADD, attention deficit disorder, because inattention is really the core element of the problem.
So officially, ADD does not exist in the diagnostic manuals.
Yeah, be careful. You're almost quoting a book that's out recently, a not particularly accurate book either. But yeah, there is no longer an attention deficit disorder. I've kind of stuck with it.
Well, last night I was out to dinner with some friends, and I mentioned that I was talking about this topic. And two of them at the table said, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to listen because I think I have that. How many people have ADHD?
Yeah, what a good question, Joy. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I can tell you the exact answer right down to the point. Who knows is the answer. Nobody can tell. And this is one of the interesting things we see in the quote, debate, unquote, in the media right now about ADD. You'll see these frequent citations that ADHD is overdiagnosed, that there are 25% of all the people with ADHD diagnoses don't have it. Well, there's no way to know that because you don't know how many people in the population actually have ADD. And until you know that, you can't determine whether it's overdiagnosed or, as a number of people have said, underdiagnosed. And the reality is it's just often misdiagnosed in situations where providers aren't really doing a very thorough evaluation. So it's a wonderful question, but the answer is nobody knows.
Nobody knows. But according to the CDC, 11% of kids ages 4 to 17 now have the diagnosis, which is up 8% since 2003. What does that say to you? Does that say it's overdiagnosed?
Well, and again, that's the logical fallacy. The 11% are the people who've actually received the diagnosis. And of course, we know that there are many kids who have not been diagnosed because they keep coming to our offices. So the worry that this increase, there's a sort of conspiracy theory that runs through the media right now. And there's a pretty good book recently called The ADHD Explosion. And they actually do a really good job of talking about why this has happened in some of the statistics. But even they sort of offer this idea that it's, quote, overdiagnosed. And that would, you would have to know this total number of people in order to say it's overdiagnosed. So the real question is, are people getting diagnosed sometimes who should not be? And they are. And sometimes those are kids and sometimes those are adults. And it just really comes down to a thorough assessment. So I'm not very worried about the explosion. We still have a 89% of kids who are not diagnosed. And it's interesting. I have diabetes. I'm type 2 diabetic. And we've had an explosion of diagnoses of diabetes. And no one ever gets on media and says, diabetes exists. It's just, that never happened. And we've had much higher increases in diabetes than ADHD.
Well, generally, how is ADHD diagnosed? What is someone presenting with that would, the signs or symptoms of having ADHD or ADD?
It's sort of two questions. One is, how does it get diagnosed? And the answer is poorly in a lot of cases. And, I love physicians. If it weren't for family care physicians and primary care physicians, a lot of my clients would have no one to turn to for medication management. But too often, just had it happen in my office last week, somebody comes in and what they just want to do is they've gotten online and they've seen this set of symptoms or they've heard this radio show or something, and they rush into their primary care physician, and the primary care physician spends, 10 or 15 minutes with them. In some cases, there are pediatricians that will spend a half hour, 40 minutes talking with them, and then they hand them a prescription, and out the door they go. So too often, that's how it's done. How it should be done is through a thorough psychological or psychiatric interview, which could take an hour, between an hour and 4 hours over the course of a few weeks, and then applying standardized testing, and you fill out forms. We happen to use a computer interface, but they're not just, online freebies. It's a norm referenced test, which means you're being compared to people of your gender and approximate age, which is very critical because, as you can well imagine, 7-year-old boys who have ADD are not like 25-year-old women. There's a lot of difference. And so what you're looking for in terms of the symptoms are issues of organization, of inability to concentrate, how people read, whether they can consume texts for pleasure, whether they can consume one of those boring, statistics or Western Civ texts that students have to do in college, or whether they can force their way through it, or whether they, reread the same chapter 5 or 6 times. And you're also looking for things in relationships, whether they have lots of serial relationships one after the other, whether they quit jobs very quickly. This is kind of why the title is I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, that sense of restlessness. And, others, but those are some of the main symptoms. Yeah.
And the subtitle, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD, what does that mean exactly, to successfully live with these conditions?
Well, this is, I think, one of the things people who don't have ADD just cannot wrap their heads around. I honestly think if people who post these blogs and write these books that are sort of condemning of people with ADD would step back a second and see what it's like for folks who genuinely have the diagnosis, it's hard. It is very difficult to navigate through just the daily tasks, whether it's driving or organizing yourself or Getting up, I always say, this is a good day to mention this, I always say that the most important organizational task you do in a day is getting out of bed. And for people with ADHD, these things can be really difficult, and they tend to feel the opposite of successful. People with ADD tend to feel low self-efficacy, which means you don't feel very good at life. And, of course, this varies from people who are quite severe to people who it's just sort of an annoying accoutrement in their life. But most folks feel a sense of impairment. They feel like they just can't manage as well. And so the idea of this successful living is to figure out what are all the little daily tasks you have to think about, to be intentional about, in order to get from here to there. Mm-hmm. And we're pretty successful with that, but I always have respect for the people who can do it, because it takes a tremendous amount of effort and more intentionality, more before you're acting or speaking than the rest of us.
Is it your do you need, if you have ADD, do you have to have medication to live successfully?
Well, it kind of depends where you fall on the continuum. My generic answer to that is probably so, which is not the answer a lot of folks want to hear. Everybody so badly wants this. Psychologists want therapy to fix it, and chiropractors want back adjustments, and naturopaths want supplements and diet changes. And what we know from all the research and all of the major organizations agree that the best treatment is a combination of both a therapy program, much like what I talk about in the book, and medication management. Now, one of the things I lay out pretty clearly in the book is that people fall usually on a continuum. And I see this continuum, I find a helpful way to think of this continuum, as being between ADD and anxiety. And most people are not diagnosable with either one, but they're going to lean one way or the other. And so they may be the sort of carefree, fun-loving people, but they get business taken care of. Those are the ADD leaners. And then you have those people who are just really conscientious and fastidious, and they're always, they're the people that you love to work with because they're always on top of it. Those are the anxious leaners. They don't ever get to the diagnosis. So among the ADD leaners, most of those people are never going to need medication. The closer you get to tipping over, you lean so far you're mm-hmm. impaired with ADD, the more you start having to look at a formal treatment. And that usually will include medication. Have I seen adults out of school, in jobs, not having to take medicine who have ADHD? Yes. But those jobs usually tend not to be the tech jobs or the ones that require constant new learning or high levels of social interaction, or they're more entertaining, more creative, spontaneous. Those are the kind of things where folks can do without medicine. We have the diagnosis.
Our guest is board-certified family psychologist Wes Crenshaw, who is the author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. And we welcome your questions for him. Do you live with, or do you know someone who lives with ADD or ADHD? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is psychologist Wes Crenshaw, author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. And we welcome your questions and experiences for him. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And since we have calls coming in, let's go to Brian in Wisconsin Dells first. Hello, Brian.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
My question is, I have a younger brother who was diagnosed with ADHD probably when he was under 10 years old. And he's now 23. My question is, will his ADHD get better with time, or will he struggle with this every day for the rest of his life? Because, in our family, it's definitely been the biggest challenge we deal with every day, because he channels learned to become extremely patient with it, and we've learned to deal with it, but I'm just worried about him in the rest of his life. And so I guess that's my question is, will it get better with time?
That's a really good question, and a particularly acute one in your family, because I know I work with the young people you're talking about, and I know how difficult that can be. So I have two thoughts on that. The first is that we are still trying to figure out this issue of whether people recover from ADHD. In the book, I actually say that that really does not happen, that people will always have it. However, there is some interesting research that just came out the other day where they are studying the brains of people who appear to have recovered in the age your brother is, and those brains with PET scans look different than people who are in the active throes of ADHD in adolescence and childhood. So maybe we're going to see some change in that literature. At this moment, my view is, from what I see in my office, and I've been doing this 22 years, so I have kids I've seen since they were pretty young that are now having kids of their own, I do not see it remit. What does change for some people is you get out of trade school or college or a learning environment, and you don't really need stimulant medication as much anymore because the focused attention necessary to read a textbook or learn a shop manual isn't there. You know your job, you know your career, you're able to kind of move through it without that. That said, as I point out in the book, there are a lot of decisions each of us make every minute, every hour, every day, and those are critical decisions. For instance, anybody can decide to go to college. My office cat can decide to go to college. The question is, do you decide to get up and do what needs to be done every day? And those small decisions usually are improved for people with ADHD with treatment and stimulant medication. You also mentioned your brother has some problems with aggression. That's fairly uncommon with ADHD. It does happen. I've seen it. But one also looks usually in those cases for either a co-occurring mood disorder, or sometimes the symptoms of mood disorders like bipolar are manifest themselves in ADHD-like symptoms. So presuming he's had a good evaluation and ruled out all those other things, and ADHD is the main cause for his symptoms, he's probably going to struggle with that at least through his 20s, if not beyond.
Okay. Well, interestingly enough, he just got graduated from college, and the last 6 months he's been better than ever before. But
You may have just run into exactly that issue, and that's good for him. He deserves kudos. Nothing is happier for me than going to a college graduation of someone who has struggled with ADHD through college or high school, for that matter. But, yeah, once you get out of that really stressful environment where learning is everything, sometimes people relax and they function a lot better in society. So you may be in for a treat on that.
Yeah. So walk us through, Dr. Crenshaw, the treatment for ADD. What does it look like?
One of the first things we try to do is really get a good dialogue going with the prescriber. And I have an advanced registered nurse practitioner who will be starting with me in January. Most medications now for ADD are either prescribed by independent practice nurses or by primary care physicians, because psychiatrists are just becoming like the proverbial hen's teeth, too scarce to find. And so we have to establish a good dialogue with those folks, because there's a lot of experimentation that goes on trying to get medicine right. It is so not a turnkey operation. So early in that process, we're doing a lot of dialogue about how medicines affect the person's mood and how it affects their focus. And I'm kind of fortunate in that I have two of my own biological children who are ADHD, and so I have a very precise understanding of how to do this to minimize the side effects and to maximize the impact. And physicians, insurance companies just don't pay physicians or nurse practitioners to spend hours necessary for the dialogue. So that's part one of that, getting that going and finding the right spot. And that can take a while. The second thing we do is try to work off what I have in the book are the 13 principles that work well with ADHD. And we really talk about those at every session. How are they fitting into my life? And those domains are often school, work, and relationships. And you will kind of rotate through those domains depending on what's going on in the client's life every week and talk about and I do not talk this way with clients because it's boring. Clients just hate hearing people talk in cognitive behavioral terms or something. But we'll talk about being intentional, talk about decision-making, talking about impulse control, pausing before you act, how you treat others, all of those things, and really make that more deliberative.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will talk about more about those 13 principles and other ways to live successfully with ADD and ADHD with our guest, Wes Crenshaw, board-certified family psychologist from Kansas City Metro, author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Life with attention deficit disorder, ADD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, can present many challenges. We are talking with a guest psychologist and author about how to successfully live with ADD and ADHD. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, July 24th. What do you think of when you hear the words attention deficit hyperactivity disorder? Do you live with ADD or ADHD, or do you know someone who does? What obstacles have you had to overcome? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Wes Crenshaw, PhD, a board-certified family psychologist from Kansas City Metro. He's written a weekly advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World for nearly 10 years. And next month, he'll begin a regular blog and periodic articles for Attitude magazine. He is the author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Let's talk, Wes Crenshaw, about a little bit about this I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not. And why don't you tell the story about Morgan, one of your clients who I believe was a college student.
Let's see. You're going to have to remind me because I'm not looking at the book. I have so many good folks in the book.
Yeah, I know you have too many, and they probably all do have pseudonyms. She was the one who did not want to be a social worker anymore.
Yeah. The first opening chapter, I was thinking that was right. Well, Morgan is very typical. All of the vignettes in the book are based on real cases. They're highly disguised and approved. But I picked them not because they're odd, but because they represent some aspect of ADHD. And Morgan's case is she's the young person who has three majors in college, and often some of the majors are a little bit zany. She wants to go into a pet chiropractic. I actually had to get online and look this up. There really is animal chiropractic. And some of these things that are not fully thought out, she decides to go into library science because the library is quiet, but Morgan doesn't even like to read. She doesn't finish any of the books that she starts, and has kind of the serial relationships, and she'll quit a job after just a few weeks. And so she's the example of people who always want to be where they're not. It's always somewhere else that you'll find your bliss, and that's where you go. And then you get to somewhere else and find out that apparently your bliss is somewhere else. And you go there and just in a constant state of restlessness. And a lot of times for the college students, and this book tends to skew a little bit towards the college folks, but that includes trade school and any kind of post-secondary education. And for a lot of these kids, a year or two in, if they survive that long, because the dropout rate is really high, you're really trying to figure out any port in the storm. that you can get to. And with Morgan, we ended up getting her kind of a general studies bachelor's degree, and then she had to really work in the career path to find something that she could match that up with. So you're trying to keep people sort. Sometimes I told somebody the other day, I always feel like I'm trying to land a crashing plane with you. And she looked at me and said, tell me about it. It's been the way my whole life. So trying to find some place to get to that will work for career, relationship, et cetera. And that ranges from kind of funny sometimes to really desperate. And I sort of lay out different examples of that throughout the book.
Let's take another call. Go to Jerry in Madison. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. My child was recently diagnosed as an anxious child, and I wanted the doctor to touch on the difference between ADHD and an anxious child. I've noticed that, well, what really got us to thinking about our child being anxious was sometimes like a gloom and doom attitude that he always had, that something was going to go wrong or something was wrong, and he just couldn't relax. And also, if he can touch on, is this an hereditary thing, or is this just something that he developed over a course of time? I'll take a comment off the air.
I do a lot of public radio, and I love it because you get such intelligent, thoughtful questions, and there's another good example. So, hereditary, yes, on both the ADD and anxious side of the spectrum. The difference is you might want to pick up the book because I actually, for a book about ADD, I actually talk a fair amount about anxiety in there. So the anxious people care too much, and the ADD people don't care enough. And I don't mean morally. I don't mean like the ADD people don't care about the environment or something. I mean that they don't pay attention to those things going on around them that the rest of us know are important. They can't prioritize those things. They can't say, oh, I need to do my math homework because that test is due tomorrow, instead of my favorite homework, which is history. I'm going to read 3 chapters ahead today. So even when there are good things, like reading chapters for history, they get caught up in that and miss the detail of math being done tomorrow. They don't care about that enough. The anxious people care too much. They are worried about everything. Just as the caller says, they often have a kind of grim view of things. People will get misdiagnosed with depression when they really are anxious. Now, the medicines for that are the same medicines, so a lot of times it doesn't matter. But for therapy, it matters whether you're treating a depressed person or an anxious person or an ADD person. And what you want to do with parenting and the anxious people, in fact, it's helpful for parents to think about whether their child is an anxious leaner or even diagnosable in the case of the caller or an ADD leaner. And if you know that, then you know how to tailor your parenting. So with the anxious people, you have to calm them. My dad stole this one from Mother Jones. I didn't know he stole it from Mother Jones. I just thought he was brilliant. He was a minister, and he said, my job is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Yeah. And with the anxious kids, you want to comfort them. You don't want to scare them. With the ADD people, you kind of have to chase them around and raise their anxiety, just as you have to lower the anxiety of the anxious people. There are a group, about 25%, of people with ADD also have a diagnosable or close to diagnosable anxiety disorder. And as I talk about in the book, those people, I swear, are the most tortured people I have ever worked with, because they are like chasing themselves around all the time, like scaring themselves. They don't follow through on things, and then they beat themselves up for it. So that's kind of the 3 domains, and caller's exactly right. It's tough, particularly with younger kids, when there's a lot of anxiety involved.
Well, do you have maybe a little, some words of hope for Jerry? Can his child live successfully with this anxiety with ADD?
Yeah, I treat a bunch of these too, usually in the 12, 13 age group and up. But the 2 or 3 things that go into that, there are really good medicines that help, very minimal side effect profiles with things like Lexapro that help with that. But then also you have cognitive strategies where you basically have to just flat out teach somebody not to care as much. And that's a lot easier for me to say than to actually do, but you begin to talk about worst-case scenarios. Well, what will happen if your friends don't talk to you tomorrow? What's going to happen? And you walk through all these scenarios, and usually things are not as catastrophic as they appear. I also use this metaphor of the bear. If you're in Colorado and there's a sign that says there's bears in the woods, tie up your food, mm-hmm. and you're laying in your tent at night and you hear a noise and your partner says, "Did you tie up the food?" And you say, "No." There's a pretty good chance there's a bear out there and you should be scared. If you're sitting in Madison or Milwaukee and you hear a noise outside and you jump up and hide in the closet because you're pretty sure there's a bear,
that's
anxiety. And that little story actually works pretty well for people to begin to assess, is my fear realistic? And so therapy works with kids like that. It's not a quick process. People always want things to be like 10 steps to forgetting your anxiety, and that's not usually how.
Well, we talked a little bit about how people with ADD can have lots of problems and with organization and the like. You also talk about responsibility and honesty. Do people with ADD struggle with responsibility and honesty?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things I do in the book is at the beginning of each chapter, I learned by workshopping this book heavily with people with ADD, having them read it and give me their feedback, that they just don't want to read a whole book. And so I have the book set up so you can just read what you need to read. And each chapter starts with a checklist. Is this chapter for me? That's what the checklist mm-hmm. is. And you go through the list and decide, is this me? Well, in the not everybody is going to have every problem in every chapter, of course, but in order cover the gamut, I talk to people as if they do in the book. And so for many people with ADD, but not all, being responsible is difficult. And there are two ways we use that term in the English language. One is to be able to take care of yourself so we don't have to. And we see people with ADD living at home well past 18, 19, or 20. Sometimes they're living in their parents' home in their basement till they're 27 or 28. Now, before everybody runs to the phone and calls up and says, "I have ADD and I don't live in the basement," I'm very aware that is true. But in the treatment environment, we see this frequently. People are just not able to launch. That's being not responsible one way. The other way people with ADD struggle with responsibility is not taking ownership of their choices. And you will get in here and you'll have quite a stirring discussion with a young person who's flunked out of school, and it is the fault of the teachers. The teachers are not good teachers. The principal or the president of the college or the parent or the tutor, these people have failed. And if you don't teach someone to take ownership, and that gets bloody sometimes, it can be quite a discussion. If you don't teach them to take ownership, then they are not empowered to change. Because I've been to graduate school, and those people aren't going to change. Only you can adjust yourself. And then honesty, people with ADD are not psychopathic liars, even the small percentage that have problems telling the truth. They lie to cover up that feeling of inadequacy, that sense of poor efficacy. And so that is the impulse, and you have to teach the people around the ADD person how to handle those situations so that the ADD person doesn't feel compelled out of shame to say, "No, I didn't do it," or "That it wasn't my fault," or "I don't know what you're talking about." So I talk to people about how to do that, both for their kids and for themselves in the book.
We are talking with Wes Crenshaw. He's a board-certified family psychologist and author of "I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not: Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. And we welcome your questions for him and your experiences with ADD. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about living successfully with ADD and ADHD with our guest, psychologist Wes Crenshaw, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a story to share about living with ADD, any challenges or obstacles you've had to overcome, or if you have some questions about treatment and how to live successfully with ADD. We welcome your call. Next caller is Joe in Madison. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I just recently graduated college, and even through high school, there are people it seemed like they're getting the medication and taking the medication for tests. And it seemed like the people who are prescribed the medication just seem to get terrific grades easily. I don't know. It just seems like a prescription for everyday life and a super pill, maybe.
Yeah, and thanks for mentioning that. One of the people who does these shows with me, who is a person your age, and she is, amazingly enough, from Wisconsin, she is the most interesting young adult to speak about ADHD that you'll ever find about it in her own life. And one of her number one frustrations, she just talked about it on a show the other day, is that people with ADD, medicine levels the playing field if it's done correctly. It makes it so people with ADD can perform at the same level as other people do. So along come the non-ADD people and either buying stimulants on the street or going in and talking a physician into prescribing for him, come back and start taking these medicines as study drugs. And this infuriates her because then these people are going in amped up on speed, essentially, and, doing better on tests. Now, I have and this is so common, as the caller says, it's just an everyday occurrence. There is so much particularly fast-acting Adderall out on the streets that it just blows your hair back. The first thing I would want to say is that has nothing to do with treating ADD. It's an important topic. I'm totally with you on it. But the people who need to be on medicine, we shouldn't be condemning them because other people are misusing the medicine. This is why we are very careful in an evaluation. Anybody that comes in and I start to scrutinize their quest for a diagnosis, if they bail out on me, I know they were drug-seeking. I know they were primarily interested in using the medicine as a study drug. Now, there are those who argue that everybody deserves to take amphetamines if they want to. I don't personally adhere to that. But the thing that's interesting to me is, having done this for so long and struggled alongside people with ADD in their taking these medicines and having kind of a love-hate relationship with them, they need the medicine, they know it works well for them, but there are all these side effects, weight loss and irritation and all these things. I don't know anybody who genuinely is ADD who likes taking these medicines. They're thankful they exist, but they don't like it. And so the people who don't have ADD, it just boggles my mind why that seems like a good idea to them. I don't think there's any evidence that really proves that taking amphetamines or methylphenidate, if you don't have ADD, really improves a person's performance. But a whole topic for another show, if you want to do it sometime,
yeah,
is prescription drug abuse in this age group. Mm. It is off the chart.
Well, we've touched on it, and certainly we can do it again. Yeah. And this relates to something you wrote in a recent newspaper column. You said it's become trendy to bash the diagnosis of ADHD, those of us who hand it out, and by extension, those who have it. Talk about why this is a problem, that the diagnosis is bashed, or stories like this are used to maybe discredit the diagnosis of ADD.
I have pondered this a lot, and I had mentioned earlier the diabetes example, and I appreciate the fact that nobody bashes me for diabetes. Now, I swim every day. I've lost a bunch of weight. I actually eat well. I do all these things that I should do for my health. So people really can't say, gosh, why are you taking medicine? You ought to just be able to fix it with health, because I do all that stuff. But nobody ever comes around and bugs me about that. And yet people are always writing these articles attacking ADHD. There's this book out called ADHD Doesn't Exist. And I, if that guy wants to debate me on any national media anywhere about that topic, I will be happy to take him on, as will about 300 of my clients. It isn't true. And there's the thing that's interesting is there's no controversy about ADHD among any legitimate resource. Now, do we have questions about the best ways to treat it or, you know, the role of medicine? Sure, that's a legitimate professional discussion. But this idea it doesn't exist, and this idea that there are all these kids being diagnosed. One of the recent studies, I almost hate to bring this one up, but there's this recent study from the CDC that says, I call it the 10,000 toddler study. And there are these 10,000 toddlers that are on stimulants. And this hit the media, and people were freaking out. And what people have forgotten is, I actually did the calculations, this is 0.0426% of all toddlers, 0.4% of all toddlers. And I've seen those toddlers. That's not my age group, but I know families that have them. And they are so severe, it's almost unbelievable. And they're like at risk of hospitalization, these kinds of kids. And people, of course, instead make this argument in the media that we're just medicating kids for being kids. Like there are these little kids and they're just kind of running around the house and some evil pediatrician shows up and forces them to take medicine. This is not at all what it's like, but that makes a better story. And I think there are people, maybe some like the caller that kind of frustrated with people taking stimulants and using them for performance enhancement. Maybe there are people angry about this diagnosis because they think people are just pretending or feigning it. But you sure get a lot of it, and it hurts people with ADD. They feel marginalized by that kind of thing.
We're so short on time, but I meant to present Gail's question on Facebook, if you could be as brief as possible.
Sure.
Whether there are natural treatments for ADHD, like magnesium, the Feingold diet, and she mentioned something else.
Yeah, the problem is that a lot of things are held out. There's another thing called brain balancing. And all of these things, none of them have been shown to have any efficacy in independent studies. And I understand drug companies fund most of the research on drugs, so people are suspicious of that. And it's understandable. It makes sense. And I'm not sponsored by any drug company, I might add. But there's never been any evidence that any kind of dietary changes or brain balancing or exercise or anything else changes correctly diagnosed ADD. There are some symptoms of other things. There are some people with gluten sensitivity that have ADD-like symptoms. That's not ADD. If you can correct it with an elimination diet, great. But generally, those things have not shown efficacy in the literature.
We'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist from the Kansas City Metro. He is author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Thanks to Justin Williams and to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.